thanks for tuning in to the 12th episode of the Handmade with Heart podcast. On this episode, I interview Meg from Haybug Ceramics. We talk about focusing on self-compassion, challenging yourself creatively, and dealing with scammers. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Handmade with Heart podcast. I'm your host, Dana, and I own the small business Scrappy Stitch. Have you ever wanted to know more about some of your favorite small businesses? Follow along as I interview other creative small business owners. We'll talk about getting started, what an average day for a creator is like, tips and tricks, and of course, everything is Handmade with Heart. Hey, Meg, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us how you got started?
Yeah, so I'm Meg. I'm the owner of Haybug Ceramics, and it's hard to answer how I got started because I feel like I got started a really long time ago, and then I had a really long break and then dove back in. But I would definitely say I've always been interested in pottery and ceramics. My mom signed me up for pottery classes when I was a kid. I did infinite numbers of independent studies in high school, and I had friends who were into ceramics in college and got to hang around in the art studios with them. And then for a couple of years, I couldn't really get into a pottery class or couldn't quite afford, you know, taking a class out of any kind at a rec center. And then over the last couple of years, my neighbor owns the community studio that I work out of, the Kiln Room, Columbus, and got to meet him and started going there, and everything kind of blossomed. So yeah.
That's great. How did you get your shop name?
We used to have a cat. Her name was Lily, but I would call her Bug because she was my little cuddle bug. And she died very suddenly and unexpectedly, and she was very attached to me. And so anytime I would come home, or if I was not in the same room as her, she would start to whine and meow kind of incessantly, and she wouldn't stop until I would say, "Hey, Bug," and then she would jump up on my lap and start purring. And that had happened very consistently like that. We had a nice little routine going. And then last May, she died really suddenly, and I miss her a lot. And it was actually my husband's idea. He was going to get me a stamp for my birthday the following June after she had died. And he was like, "Well, I didn't want to get you a stamp that said like, 'Hey, Bug Ceramics,' if that wasn't something that you actually wanted to call your pottery business." And I was like, "Oh, but that's a really cute name. I think I want to do that." And so I thought about it for a little while, and I was like, "I think that's it." And so it's a nice way to bring Lily with me along for this. But yeah, I miss her a lot. She was a good cat.
Oh, I know. That's the worst. I know JoJo's getting older. I had a cat that just passed away in September last year, and her name was Gizmo. Every morning at 2 a.m, she would start off in the basement, and you'd hear, "Hello." Like, yes. I swear, she'd go, "Hello." And then we'd go, "We're up here, Gizzy." And you hear pitter patter, pitter patter. And she'd run up the steps. And then now she's in the kitchen. "Hello." "Up here, Gizzy." Pitter patter, pitter patter. You know, she'd get a little closer. And it's like, "Oh my gosh, you know where we are. Come on up." You know?
She's like, "Yeah, but that's the pattern. We have to do it that way."
It was the pattern. Yeah. How did you get your logo design?
Yeah. So my friend Nick, who is a talented web designer, and he has lots of experience in creating logos and graphic designs. And I don't think that graphic design is exactly his, like, I don't know that he would identify as a graphic designer, but it is something that seems to come very naturally for him. And we were coming up with ideas for the logo, and I was leaning towards something that had more of kind of like a natural feel. I knew I wanted a lightning bug, and I found this artist whose name is Thorn Eater. That's their artist name, Thorn Eater, and shared with Nick this work. And so it was very much inspired by Thorn Eater's work. So I definitely recommend checking out his work. Very cool. It's pretty beautiful.
So you told me you make small batch pottery with a focus on self-compassion. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I, like I'm sure many people, have a really harsh inner critic, and it can be a little incessant at times. And self-compassion is the act of treating yourself with kindness, compassion, you know, in the same way that you would treat a friend who had a hard day or maybe had, you know, an awkward interaction and was looking for some comfort, instead of listening to that harsh critic, or at least maybe not necessarily not listening to it, but maybe creating additional space for a softer voice, a kinder voice for yourself. So it's, you know, it's kind of that adding in that component. And so I like to do that with each piece that I work on. You know, there's always mistakes that happen, and trying to bring that compassion, that self-compassion into it, but also to remind other people that, you know, we are all just trying our best and trying to get from one moment to the next, and try to bring that in where I can. Sometimes I'll add sayings to some of the work that I do. You know, I like working with the little rubber stamps. Those are always really fun to add in, like different sayings and stuff. But even just, you know, sitting with imperfection, and what I do a lot of hand building, and even when I throw on the wheel, I am not very proficient at throwing on the wheel. I'm definitely more proficient in hand building, but hand building and ceramics in general, I think, is prone to mistakes. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that could make somebody say, well, this whole thing is, you know, not worth moving forward with one mistake. And I work really hard to not do that. I have some perfectionistic qualities, you know, in terms of the things I think back on in my life where, you know, school projects or even organizing my house a certain way, things wanting to be a certain way. And ceramics is kind of an active act of sitting with imperfection, sitting with mistakes. And that also ties into that self-compassion of like, yeah, yep, that was a mistake and I can see it, and it's great as it is. It doesn't have to be that the mistake is the only thing that's seen.
I can definitely relate to that. I wish I had the confidence I have now. Yes. When I was in my early 20s and stuff, because you do, you learn so much, and yes, you continue to grow, and you realize I was total perfectionist, and now it's like, I'll try again, or
yeah.
Okay, it's not 100% perfect, but it's fine, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I think, like, there's something to be said for taking something away from that, right? Like, okay, you know, maybe I don't love this mistake or whatever, but it doesn't totally ruin the piece. And I know now what I might do differently the next time. And I think that that's also like a really, you saying, you know, that about being in your early 20s, I'm like, oh my gosh. Yeah. What a time. But it just reminded me of, like, at every point in my life, you know, every kind of momentous age, right? You know, you're 18, 21, 25, you think that you know the most you're going to know, right? And it could be like, you know yourself more than you'll ever know yourself, right? But I remember at one point in my early 20s thinking, there's no possible way I could know myself better than I do in this moment. And now I'm 32 and like, oh my gosh, I had no idea. Mm-hmm. I had no idea. And so I think that that translates really well into creativity and art. And it's like, yeah, I think I know myself. I know my style. I know my work well in this moment, but I'm going to know it even better 10 years from now. I don't know what I'll know yet, but I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, kind of bringing that back to like self-compassion of like, mm-hmm, yeah, this is what I know in this moment. I'll know more later.
Where do you get your inspiration from?
I definitely am inspired by a lot of different textures in nature and all of that. Like, I think about that a lot when I'm walking dogs, or like when I went to the beach this last summer, I, you know, played around with seashells. Like, that was really fun, playing with those textures. And that is inspirational. But I think a lot of my inspiration comes from just everyday experiences, big feelings, and kind of going back to the, you know, self-compassion and big feelings in general. I have these little wall hangings that I make that I love them, but they say sensitive and strong. And then it has like a little butterfly that hangs on it. And I really like that kind of idea of bringing in these, you know, almost what people might think of as two different points, right? To be sensitive, but to also be strong. And I think about bringing all of that into my work, you know, kind of these two big ideas or two big feelings or multiple feelings and kind of bringing that into a piece of work somehow. It might not always look like it from the outside looking in, right? It's not as obvious in saying like, oh, sensitive and strong, right? It's like right there, right in front of your face. But I might have a mug that I worked on a particularly tricky day that to me, I can look back and know like, oh yeah, I remember that mug. And it might represent an outlet for me, but might not necessarily represent that for somebody else.
You told me a little bit about the studio space you work in, but you also do some things at home too, right?
Yes.
Yeah. How does that work?
Yeah, so I hand build everything at home in my home studio, and then I will very carefully wrap it up and buckle it into my car, and then I drive it to the studio and drop it off to be fired, and then I'll glaze everything while I'm there as well. And so it doesn't really come back until I have it all complete. If I do any throwing, I have a treadle wheel at my house, which is kind of, it's like a kick wheel with an extra part that makes it a little bit easier on the body. You can do it while you're standing, which is more comfortable for me, but it's a little messy. So I use that wheel mostly for trimming at home to kind of like, you know, trim up some pieces after I've thrown them on an electric wheel at the studio. If I had my treadle wheel in my backyard, it'd be a lot easier. I could just like hose it off, but it's a little messy to have in the house. Right now, our house, at some point, we're going to replace all the floors, but we still have carpet in our office studio space. So try to not slop too much on there.
Yeah. You said on one of your Instagram reels that you're pretty clumsy.
Oh, yeah.
Have you had some unfortunate accidents?
Yes. I have and I haven't. You know, there are times where I've dropped a finished piece, thinking like, this is it, this is the end, right? It's like falling in slow motion and then it like bounces up and then it's totally fine. But there have definitely been a lot of casualties. I remember this past winter, I had been working on a platter for my dad. And when he and my mom got married, they were gifted this really beautiful platter that in the last several years, he had accidentally, I think, left it on a burner. Like, you know, they have a glass top stove,
yeah,
and didn't realize that the burner was still on. He had like placed it on there and then it was getting hot and hot and ended up cracking. So it's still in one piece, but it's not usable anymore. Mm-hmm. It's not food safe. And so he was, you know, thinking about that and thinking about my mom. And he's like, you know, it would be cool if, you know, maybe you could make another one for us. And so I had been working on it for a long time because I wanted to get it just right. And so I remember coming home and I showed my husband and I was like, look, I made this platter. And he's like, oh, that's awesome. I had gone through a couple iterations and I just happened to let it go at just the right angle that it just like lightly, and I mean really lightly, touched the corner of this, I don't know, container we had, mm-hmm, like an empty plastic container. And I must have hit it in just the right angle, or maybe this is a sign that the handles maybe weren't that well constructed, and it just broke off and shattered.
Oh, no.
But I think it was probably a good sign because I ended up making another one that I liked way better. So it all worked out.
That's a good way to look at it. We have our very first Ask the Artist. So I put out on Instagram if anybody has any questions for you. And friend of the show, Inspired by Vintage Designs, asked, I imagine firing up a kiln is expensive. How do you factor this into your price?
It's a good question. I do not have a kiln at my house. At some point, I would like to, but it would require us to hire an electrician and get all of that wired, which you can do preemptively. You know, if I looked online and I looked at exactly what kind of kiln I wanted to get, the size of the kiln, that kind of thing. From what I've read, electricians could say, oh, okay, I know what I need. I could go ahead and install that. So I could, you know, factor that out and budget it. I just haven't done that. So everything that I fire goes through the kiln room, which is the name of that studio that I work out of. And the price of my pieces gets factored into how much it costs to fire each individual piece. The way that the studio does that is they charge expiring fees based on the weight of a piece. So that gets added in, you know, a small percentage of that gets added into the ultimate price of my work.
Can they put like multiple pieces in?
They put multiple pieces in their shelves. So what's really cool about kilns is that you can really customize it each time you load the kiln.
Oh, that's cool.
So you can put different stilts on, and different stilts have different heights. So if I had like a giant vase that I wanted to fit into the kiln, I could do that. But if I had, you know, maybe a little bit of room on, you know, one side, if I had the right stilts, I could stack it up and then I could, you know, put a couple mugs on a top. You know, something okay. like, I don't know if that makes sense. Yeah, I'm using my hands a lot for an audio medium.
That's okay, because this will be on YouTube too. So
great. With things like the hand-built mugs that I make. So there's different phases of clay. So there's greenware, which is when it's unfired and still wet. And then there's bone dry. So that's where it's unfired, its most fragile state, which is when all the moisture has been taken out of clay. When there's no moisture, that's when it's like, oh, okay, this could be like, it's very, very fragile then. Each mug that I make, I have different sizes. At a bone dry state, each mug is, it's either 0.6 or 0.8 pounds. So it's like less than a pound. So I factor that into the pricing. And then depending on the glaze that I use and the weight of the glaze, that also the end result of that second firing varies a little bit more. But I'll be totally honest, in terms of pricing, I am not the person to ask. A lot of it is based on feel, or, you know, I factor in enough to make back what I spent to create it. And then sometimes it's like, I just need this to go away so that I can have more room on my shelf. So like, let's add it in to a bundle or something like that.
Last year, I believe it was last year, you challenged yourself to make 52 different handle styles. How did that go?
I will say, and you know, to practice what I preach, I will say it went well and I didn't finish it. I did that challenge for myself because I had been finding that adding in handles was my least favorite part of making mugs. It was something that I would like dread doing every time. And so I wanted to try to challenge myself to make putting on handles more fun and engaging. And I feel like I accomplished that. I got a little over halfway. I think I had 27 total. And I still want to get to 52. I just haven't yet. But at a certain point, you know, it was started to get really busy. It was summer market season. I was trying to get things that people would be more likely to want or people were requesting. And at a certain point, I felt like, oh, I have to make my handles. I have to. And I was like, oh, no, that's not the point of this challenge. And I do remember, you know, adding in that the goal is not to reach 52. The goal is to enjoy the act. And when I wasn't enjoying it anymore, I was like, okay, I think that means I need to take a break. So I do still plan to get to 52. It's just not going to happen in a year, and that's okay. But it's very fun to do.
I like the banana one.
Thank you. That one was well received.
Yeah. Did you end up selling all of those, or did you keep them?
I have them. They're still displayed on this hutch that we have. I need to, that's another thing that I'm like, I think I need to create some space with that. I may do like an Instagram story sale with a couple of them, and then maybe add in a couple more for some like markets or something like that. Some I'll probably keep just because they were fun and I really like them, or maybe I want to keep them around and take inspiration from them.
It's so important to challenge yourself creatively because that's how you learn and grow as an artist. And I know I've been trying to challenge myself lately by sewing clothing, which is something I typically don't do. So you can only grow from there and gain new skills.
Yes. Yeah.
Would you say you spend most of your time on Instagram? You have a TikTok too, though, right?
Yes, but I do. I spend most of my time on Instagram. I'm trying with TikTok. I show my age with it. I enjoy it. I think it's just the act of learning a different mechanism that can sometimes be a little bit challenging. But I'm mostly on Instagram, I think, because it's just more accessible to me because I'm more comfortable with it.
How do you come up with your video ideas?
That's a good question. I think a lot of times I'll see something that someone else has done, or I'll hear an audio and think about how that could relate to ceramics. I think I do what a lot of people do is I'll, you know, scroll, and then I have a, I don't know if anybody else does this part in particular, but I have a specific like folder in my Instagram where I have saved audio for future reels. And so I'll go back through that folder and I'll, you know, if I'm scrolling through it and I'm like, oh yeah, something just happened that reminded me of this or that I could apply to that audio, I'll do that. Or I'll relate it back to a common experience, like dropping your mugs or messing up on the wheel or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And you have a pretty large Instagram following. How did you end up growing your audience? Do you think it's just the consistency of posting the reels?
It's a question that I get a lot. I don't really have a good answer for it, but I do think that it was consistency, especially at first. You know, I followed different content creators and I unfollowed different content creators if I didn't really, you know, vibe with the values. Sometimes it was, you know, this very cut and dry, if you do this, then this will happen. And I don't know. What I ended up realizing is that nobody actually really knows what they're doing. And
right.
Just kind of, you know, living at the whim of some algorithm. And what ended up working for me is posting a couple times a week, relatively the same time. And, you know, if you post more frequently, you're probably going to reach more people, which means that you're statistically more likely to get more follows. But I also am not that consistent anymore. You know, if I don't feel like it, I'm not going to force myself. If it is not bringing me joy, I'm not going to push myself to do it. I don't want to get to a point where I feel like I'm burning myself out on my business in parts of my business that I don't really want to put that kind of energy into it. I would much rather spend that energy, you know, creating. But sometimes creating happens in the real process, right? Like I do really enjoy that, which is, I think, part of why I do it as much as I do. Some weeks are just a little rougher than others. And so I try to give myself permission to just let's just put the phone down.
You are totally right about nobody really knows like what is going to make a video take off, because I have my largest following on TikTok. There have been times where I have spent hours and hours and hours recording a process video and editing it and doing nice voiceovers and doing everything, you know, perfectly. And I get like 50 views. And then there's a video of me and Kevin's mom eating a peanut butter and jelly sandwich that she packed me. And the caption was like, this is my favorite part of craft shows or whatever, you know. Yeah. She makes me these peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And we're just, it's like a 3-second video of us eating peanut butter and jelly sandwich with that caption. And it has like 50,000 views or something.
Yeah.
Like, what in the world? Who is watching
this? That's awesome. Yes. Yeah. I still to this day, the reel that has the most views for me is one that when I posted it, the timing messed up and it's not like lined up anymore. You know, it took me maybe 5 minutes to make, you know, I had the clips already. I just needed to clip them together. And for whatever reason, that one really took off. And then the ones that I've spent, you know, it's just like you, like, you know,
yeah,
hours and hours, like, oh, okay, you know, the timing is right on this. And then, okay, the angle was right, getting that set up with the camera. Nope, didn't take off. but I do, but I still have fun when it doesn't go off. It is enjoyable. That's just like another part of the creating process that I think my brain just really likes doing that.
I don't know if you remember this, but we started chatting on Instagram because you were doing a giveaway.
Oh yeah.
And I got a DM from an account that looked like yours.
Yes.
Somebody took a bunch of your pictures, even your profile picture. They named the Instagram account basically the same as yours, but then had a little underscore at the bottom. Mm-hmm. And then was trying to scam people and get me to click on this link. Mm-hmm. And I remember, you know, I opened the DM and I was like, this seems a little weird. And then I follow you from, you know, a couple of my different accounts.
Yeah.
Like four Instagram accounts, but I got it on each one. So this person had gone through to all your followers. Mm-hmm. So I reached out to you and I said, do you know somebody's trying to scam your audience?
Yes. Yes. Ugh, that was awful.
I think they ended up taking that account down because
yeah,
you put it in your story and then I reported it.
Yes. This is one of those things where like people are mostly good. Mm-hmm. I received so many messages from people that I did not know and people that I did know who were like, hey, I just wanted to let you know that this is happening. And then like, I just want to let you know, I reported this already, you know, people already reporting it without asking, which was fantastic. Mm-hmm. I ended up going into, for anybody who might experience this, if you go onto Instagram's website, there's a way that you can submit a claim that somebody has like, quote unquote, kind of like stolen your identity in a way. And you have to take a picture of your license to prove that you are actually the person that other people are pretending to be. And after I did that, it was pretty immediately taken down. So I don't know. I think it was a combination of all the reporting and maybe that. But when I've had other friends tell me that, you know, something like that is happening to them, that's always the route that I recommend because I think it's really direct. Yeah, that was really weird. It made me very angry that somebody was trying to.
I bet. And what a nightmare. I mean, you have to do all that extra work dealing with that whole situation, yeah. You know? It's
yeah. Something that I think helps is if you do a giveaway, adding in, this is the only account that will, like, you know, saying this is the only account that will reach out to you to let you know that you've been a winner. All others are scams. Don't click on any links. I've done that with other giveaways since, and I have not had any problems since then, but there's probably lots of room for that to happen again. But they had even taken like pictures I had just recently posted, mm-hmm. as well as ones from like a long time ago, so that if you scroll down a couple scrolls, it would look exactly like my account.
Yeah.
It was very strange.
Yeah. Who has time for that? How do you find your makers markets that you do?
A lot of them are local, ones that I'm already familiar with. So I'll have notifications turned on Instagram, or I'll sign up for their email subscriptions and then I'll get notified and go from there. Everyone does it a little bit differently. Some of them only post as they're leading up to a market, you know, a couple months out. Others will post all of the dates for the entire year and you can apply all at once. That's kind of nice because then you can apply to a bunch of them and know what your year is going to look like, which is, yeah. I do like that.
I was set up next to somebody who was selling pottery one time. And I remember I felt so bad for her at the end of the show because I didn't even think about this, but she had to wrap up each individual piece and then put it in her bin and just be so careful. And then everything was so heavy. She was telling me, I was like, oh my word.
Yeah. I have a lot of help at my markets. I am incredibly lucky. I have some friends who are just absolutely incredible friends who come to every market. If they can't come, they'll let me know and I can call in backup if I need to. And mm-hmm. they help and it makes the process go by so fast. And they're also used to it and so familiar with the process that they don't even need me to like direct anything. They'll just say like, we're going to put these in here. And I'm like, that's great. I love it. It's fantastic.
And you're in some brick and mortar stores too, aren't you?
Just recently, yes, yeah. It's called Rewash. It's a soap refillery in Clintonville, Ohio. Very cool. Yeah, they have some awesome stuff. And there's some other local makers that have some stuff in there. So I'm in good company.
How do you end up transporting your items because they're so heavy?
I have different, like, you know, kind of those big Tupperware bins and then lots and lots and lots of bubble wrap. and then, you know, you don't want them to be too heavy. And probably the absolute best investment I could suggest for any potter doing any kind of craft show where you're going to be transporting your stuff, a cart. Get yourself a heavy duty cart. Don't go for the tiny wheels. Go for like the big plastic industrial strength wheels that can go over gravel and sand and all of that. I mean, hands down, the absolute best investment I have made. It makes such a huge difference. There's this one market that we did last summer. Oh gosh, my poor husband. And my amazing friends who helped, they couldn't stay for the market, but they just came to help me unload and set up. And it was sweltering hot. And in Ohio, it's so humid. And so hot is also wet. And so it's very gross. And so we get set up and we're like dripping sweat. But the reason why we were like so exhausted was because with the way the market was set up, it was kind of at this brewery that's kind of on the corner of two streets. And so there's one street that goes behind the brewery and then the street in front of us. And that street in front of us was blocked off for an event. And the market was set up in the parking lot in front of the brewery. And where we had to park our cars was a couple lots behind the brewery. And so in theory, if there was a way, we could have just done like a very quick straight shot from the parking lot on the other end of the brewery to the parking lot. But there was no like bridge or anything like that. And it was this big wooded area. So you couldn't get through. The only way was to park and then go all the way around the brewery up the, you know, one street and then back loop back in front of the brewery. And so we had to do that several times. And at the time I did not have a cart. And so we were hand carrying all these things. Some stuff was so heavy that we needed multiple people to carry it because it was such a long way. If it was, you know, just a quick, let's just pull it out of the car and plop it on the floor, that would have been one thing. But having to carry it, you know, half a mile one way and then walk back another half mile, it was a lot. So yes, definitely something I think is worth investing in. I can't remember the brand that I got, but I love it. You know, packs up really compact. It's not that heavy by itself. It's fantastic. Thinking about this now, I'll probably make a reel and maybe a TikTok about what a great investment it is, because truly, I mean, it's a real game changer. Apparently, I'm very passionate about carts.
My cart that I have was donated to me by my sister. It's my nephew's old dune buggy. And so it has big chunky wheels.
Yes.
And, but the sides are broken, so they wanted to get a new one. Everyone knows when I'm coming because it squeaks like crazy. So I'll be pulling it and you're and I actually made a TikTok about setting up at an event last year. And somehow the squeaking of my cart went to the music of Jingle Bells. Somehow. It was crazy.
That's awesome.
So weird. I don't know how that worked. But yes, I love my cart too, because I have a very similar story where I did a show and this parking lot was at the top of a hill and my stand was all the way at the bottom. It was a pretty steep hill and it was not paved or anything. It was like big chunky stones.
Oh my gosh.
And so we had to hand carry everything down this hill, and my sister just was like, she just kept looking at me like, I'm gonna kill you, Dana. Yes. I'm like, thank you for helping me.
Yes, I often find myself thinking like, how did I get so lucky to have the friends that I have who would volunteer to do something like that? They're just so kind. And I really, honestly, I wouldn't be able to do the things that I've done in markets and, you know, even just their emotional support, you know, friends that don't necessarily come to markets every time, but are always asking, how's it going? Or what do you need? Can I help with anything? I've had friends that when I've like made some, you know, little trinkets, they'll say, can we help with that? Like, if you need to make a bunch, we can help you. That's very kind.
Yeah. I have a really good support system too. I guess I didn't realize how lucky I was, because there was one show I looked around and almost everybody was by themselves. Mm-hmm. And then I always either have Kevin's mom, Kevin, my sister, my mom has come to help me. Although she just says she just wants to stand there. She doesn't want to deal with the money. She doesn't want to deal with computers. I said, hey, it's fine with me.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it is a good feeling. The biggest show that I do all year is the Lititz Craft Show. And I had like, it was like seven people helping me the one time.
Yes.
I felt bad. There's nothing for them to do. They just wanted to come help because that's where I grew up and that was my hometown. Yeah. Aww. Yeah. So it was like my whole family, Kevin's mom, some of my friends came.
Yo, that's so great.
My dad drives his car in we loaded up with the trailer the night before and he drives it in. I'm like, oh,
that's so sweet.
I saw on Instagram you taught a class last year.
Oh, yeah.
How did that go?
It went really well. I had a friend who their spouse really wanted to play with clay and wanted to create something functional. And so I taught them a little, you know, kind of one-on-one class. So we made hand-built mugs and plates, and then I ended up doing the glazing for them. So I had an idea of what they wanted and did my best to represent that. Turned out pretty well. But yeah, it was great. They had an awesome time. I mean, they were naturals, honestly. They did a really great job. And now Jenna, the person who their spouse, you know, reached out to me about it, she's now participating in pottery classes in her local recreation center, which is fantastic.
That's great.
Yeah. So I think she's caught the bug.
No pun intended, or pun intended.
Oh, no.
That is a great pun. You did that on purpose. I know you did.
Now I might use it.
When I think of ideas, I have to put them. Where's my phone? Like, I have in my notes, I have one that's like YouTube ideas and one that's like TikTok ideas.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I definitely have that, especially if I have a day in the studio where maybe I don't have as much to glaze, or I'm not having, like, I don't have a specific piece that I'm working on. And I'm like, okay, this is going to be a day where I make a bunch of videos. I'll plan out. And those are the most productive days. I don't do that every time. If I had the executive functioning skills to do that every time, I absolutely would, because I end up walking out with 10, 12, 15 reels that I can just put out over the next several weeks. And it makes it so easy.
Do you think you're going to teach some more classes this year?
I would like to. It's a little tricky to plan out in terms of timing. We've talked a little bit offline, I guess, about how pottery is not my full-time job. Anything that I do with pottery, I have to factor in my other job that I do, as well as other life responsibilities and claying. So it's a little tricky to get that figured out, but not impossible. So I really enjoyed teaching, and I would really like to do more of it, but it's just a matter of figuring out exactly how it'll fit into my schedule.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any tips for people wanting to start out?
Just start in any way that's feasible, right? And I feel like that's, you know, just get started. That's such a, it's a really privileged thing to say. And I think that for someone, especially thinking about a hobby or a craft, you know, not even thinking about it as a business, but thinking specifically about pottery, right? It can feel very inaccessible financially. But you don't need fancy clay. I mean, air dry clay is great, depending on what you want to do and what you want to create. If you have the drive to create anything, there are ways that you can get to what you want to do. You might not be able to buy a wheel and a kiln and get all that, but even just playing around with air dry clay or Play-Doh, right? That can be fantastic just to allow you that outlet to create something. So just get started, but then in parentheses, in the way that's most feasible for you.
Tell me about your goals for this year.
Make it through. This year, I definitely, in terms of goals, I have a couple different personal projects that I'm working on that I'll share more about at another time. But making sure to reserve my energy when it comes to markets, that was something that I feel like last year, there were several months where I was really kind of burning myself out a bit, to the point where I would come home and then I would not want to make anything. And some of that just had to do with figuring out what markets were the best markets for me, because it was my first full year doing any. And so at first I signed up for a lot, and ones that were, you know, not necessarily the kind of craft types of markets. So I would be kind of the only craft or pottery person, which in a lot of ways can be great. But if somebody's going to buy, you know, vintage clothes, they're not necessarily going to buy pottery. So, you know, making sure that I'm signing up for ones that will be the places that people are going, you know, with the intention of seeking out that kind of art. And so I've done that this year. I've signed up for some new markets, but definitely within that kind of, I don't know if demographic is the right word for what I'm actually talking about, but, you know, in terms of artist demographic, maybe that's the phrasing.
I know exactly what you mean about that. I signed up for one time, and the person across from me was selling like used VCRs and stuff. And I was like, oh,
yeah.
No, I didn't make a single sale, I don't think.
Yeah.
And I ended up spending more money because I bought like lemonade and pretzels and stuff.
Yes. Yeah. 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 And it's so interesting because vintage markets, or I don't know, those more eclectic, I don't know if that's the right word, markets are great. And also just something to be mindful of in terms of, as a vendor, you know, are you at the very, very least going to make back the vendor fee?
Right.
Right. And then also the lemonade and the pretzels that you inevitably buy. Even as somebody, like I also, you know, bring snacks, you know, you were talking mm-hmm. about your mother-in-law who's bringing your peanut butter sandwiches.
Yeah.
You know, we do that, but also, you know, there's a lot of really cool stuff. And so you end up buying stuff while you're there. There's definitely a place for those. I don't know that my place belongs with those markets. And sometimes it does. It's really just more hit or miss. And so if I'm wanting something that's a little bit more steady, a little bit more reliable, it's just something to be mindful of. And this year, I feel like I have more knowledge than I did the last year. So I can be a little bit more selective.
Well, we're nearing the end of the podcast. And I always like to end the podcast with a fun fact. Do you have your random fun fact for me?
I do. So there's the old standby that pottery is very old. I think 28,000 BC might be the oldest pottery artifact that's been found. I think, I don't know if that's the exact time frame, but one of the things that I really love about clay, there's two fun facts. So one is that clay itself can be recycled pretty much in an infinite number of times. So it can't be fired, right? If it's been fired, you can't recycle it. But if, you know, I have a piece and maybe I notice, you know, it's drying and the handle's starting to crack, you don't have to just toss that clay and it's a waste. You can dunk it in water and then recycle it eventually. You know, you can dry it out and then use it again at some point, which is very helpful. And thinking about in terms of sustainability and making sure that it's a craft that's affordable for everybody, but also not wasteful in general. That's one of my favorite fun facts, is that it is infinitely recyclable. And then my other fun fact is that, and part of one of the reasons I think I love ceramics, is that there's different types of clay, and each clay has its own properties. So there's earthenware, stoneware, porcelain. So each one has its own porosity. Each one has its own, you know, absorption rates, you know, so you can really get to know a clay really well and then start working with a different clay. And it's totally different in terms of how it behaves, how it functions, how fast it dries, how evenly it can dry. And that, I think, keeps me really interested. I have clays that I really like and that I use really regularly, but then every once in a while, the kiln room will have a new clay that comes in and I'm like, oh, I want to try that, play with that. So it keeps it interesting and new and novel. And that's always really, really fun to play around with.
Love that. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much, Meg, for taking time out of your busy schedule and hanging out with me this afternoon.
Oh, I was happy to. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, it was a pleasure chatting with you.
Yes, likewise.
Have a great day.
Yeah.
Bye. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Handmade with Heart podcast. Don't forget to follow Meg at Haybug Ceramics, and you can find me at Scrappy Stitch and the Handmade with Heart podcast.